Bloom Shapiro, accounting, tax, and business advisors. Asking the questions no one else asks. Creating solutions no one else can. Because achieving your success is how Bloom Shapiro measures theirs. Step forward at BloomShapiro.com.
What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. And John, we look at things that we consider important as it relates to trends here in America. And this is clearly one that's having incredible impact. And that is the fact that the Pew Center tells us that there are fewer people who are now sitting in pews on Sunday morning. And who better than the Pew Center to tell us that there are fewer people in the pews, John?
Yeah, well, I've thought about this a little bit. You sort of wonder if our moral values aren't lost because we don't have church or we don't have some higher power in our lives anymore.
Well, there are a lot of people who have replaced it in their minds with a certain form of spiritualism. They will say that I think about the earth, I think about my neighbors, I care about them, but having a formal religion that I inherited from my parents and didn't really have a choice in, maybe I just haven't figured out what path is right for me. And they're reading all kinds of books about spirituality, but it doesn't perhaps, for some, take the place of having this organized set of beliefs and sharing them with others in a community of believers. So it's a controversial issue, but clearly there's a change going on in American society. And John, one thing I found really interesting, very few other industrialized nations that have the economic power and success that we have, and of course we're rather unparalleled in that area, really have retained their religious traditions in the way that the United States has over the years.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize that because, you see at least some of the South American countries are very religious down there. So I guess it depends on where you're at.
I'm thinking more of the European and the Nordic countries. They have in some ways abandoned a lot of those traditions. But the United States has held dearly onto them. Now, the United States does have another thing that is rather unique, which is that the mainline Protestant faiths, which have been so strong in America over the years, Episcopalian, Presbyterian, the Congregational, all of those more mainline, are really succumbing to the power of the evangelical movement, particularly in the South. And so they are being superseded in that regard. But all Christianity is seeing a falling away in terms of their numbers. And now a number that is rising in terms of American use is what they call nuns. I mean, not N-U-N-S, N-O-N-E-S. And that is really beginning to have a profound influence, particularly with young people in urban areas.
Well, I think maybe, maybe that's why, like you say, we see so much stuff going on in the news that, like I said before, maybe we've lost our moral compass because we don't have church teaching us the Ten Commandments and other things. So,
It's really interesting. The other day I fell upon a movie on Netflix called The Most Hated Woman in America about Madeline Murray O'Hare.
I remember her from the 60s.
Of course. And she actually was the woman who got prayer out of schools. We know that President Trump has talked about getting it back in, but a remarkable story, and even the story of what happened to her at the end of her life was pretty fascinating. But just this whole idea that an atheist in our society back then was really considered a pariah. No one wanted to be an atheist, so that's why the title, The Most Hated Woman in America. And yet today, I think there are a lot of people who believe in God, But then certain things happen in their lives. They begin to question it, and they're much more open about saying, yes, I want to believe in a higher power, but I don't know. I just don't know. And who can ever prove what it is that they are believing? It's a really interesting question. And America clearly is in the throes of asking itself whether organized religion is the path to salvation. So why don't we talk about this issue? Chris Vondracek is with us from the Washington Times. This is his beat. And we really go over the numbers and the reasons behind the change that we see today on America Trends.
With me on the line is Chris Vondracek, and he is with the Washington Times. And just in case somebody hasn't heard of your newspaper, tell us a little bit about it.
Sure, yeah. We are here in D.C., kind of actually nestled next to the Arboretum, if anyone ever wants to come visit. And we, you know, our focus is kind of, we have a big political staff, kind of covers the Hill and the goings on there. Print publication that circulates to most of the folks in there, and folks here in D.C. as well as kind of the DMV area. But mostly now, I think, like a lot of papers, is we have an online presence. And I serve as covering religion and education, and then sometimes dipping a toe into the very fertile, quote-unquote, outrage beat.
Oh, well, that's a growing beat.
It's a growing beat, yeah. So that can mean sometimes I have been, when the college admissions scandal broke last spring, I was, talking, you know, going back and forth with attorneys for Lori Loughlin. And I've also, there was there is always kind of a tie-in, I suppose, to education or religion, but this past August, there has been a back and forth in New Hampshire, actually, over whether a Bible should be on display at a VA. So I got brought in to speak with the VA secretary about that, as well as talk with members of a group who are opposed to that. So it's a fun sort of little pool I'm in.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, religion has meant so much historically in America. I think there are many who are amazed that America, the richest countries in the world, and yet it prays so much and is an outlier really in Western civilization these days, a country that has so much wealth, but also so much interest in belief and prayer. So I think, though, the changes that are going on are really remarkable. That's why for America Trends, I thought we should really tackle this. And I saw your article that the number of Christians in the U.S. has declined by 13 million since 2009. Yeah. Tell us what's going on. Just give us some of the numbers.
Broad scope of it is that Pew Research has been conducting these phone surveys for the last 10 years or so, and they always ask two questions. Do you have a faith, and how often do you go participate in a religious service? And what they've discovered over the course of 10 years is that essentially the percentage of Americans who consider themselves specifically to be Christian has drastically dropped. And when you look at the number, the actual just kind of raw number, and this is a little bit projected out, you know, they surveyed, and we can kind of get into the details, but they surveyed, you know, I think close to 170,000 people, and so they're projecting this. They said that when you look at what a percentage, you know, what 65% of Americans today would be versus, you know, 74%, you know, 10 years ago, there's actually been, a drop of between like maybe 11 and 13 million Christians in the country. So I don't have the pay grade to understand if that means that those people, that there's been 11 million people who have just one day said, I'm no longer a Christian, or if that maybe just factors more into people have, you know, there's people who have deceased and then the new crop filling them is not Christian. You know, that isn't played out really in the information, but at the very least it suggests a sweeping trend growth in America, particularly not just a drop of Christianity. And there's not a corresponding drop in other faiths per se, but there is a rise now to 26% of Americans, so just over one fourth of Americans, who consider themselves to be religious nuns,
Exactly. Well, that's N-O-N-E-S.
Right. So that's not a boon for the Benedictine sisters. But right, so we have, so this large population in America now who is religiously unaffiliated. And again, there's subsets of what that N-O-N-E-S means, but we can, talk more about
that. Yeah, we can dig into that. But again, that number, according to your article, was about 30 million people now who are not affiliated with any religion. And yet we do talk to a lot of people, and Chris, I'm sure that you have, and you talk to people and they say, I'm not religious, but I'm very spiritual. I do believe in something, and I do think a lot and reflect, and I do yoga, and I do meditation or whatever.
Sure.
I mean, but, there are many scholars who will say, that's not enough. I if you really believe in a religion, you really have so many ties to a community that can be so important to you, and yet Americans are ascribing to many other beliefs these days.
So, so the subsets, according to Pew, the subsets of that religious non-religiously unaffiliated category, you've got, of that 26%, there are 17% who would say nothing in particular. I mean, that's quite literally the language from their report, right? It's, quote unquote, nothing in particular. So I don't know what exactly that is to mean, but that certainly wouldn't fit the camp of people who would say to themselves to be, I'm spiritual, but I just don't practice, whatever that means, right? And then 4% say they're atheists, which is a doubling over the course of 10 years from 2%. And 5% would say they're agnostic, up from 3% 10 years ago. And so that's that 26%. Now, as far as the category or the group of folks who you, I think, are speaking to when you say sort of folks who would say, well, I'm spiritual, I have various practices, but I'm not calcified on one particular strand, that they have that plugged out as 3% quote unquote spiritual or abide by own religious belief. And so, and that seems to be fairly steady. But again, the weird thing about this is that these are all based on phone surveys. And there has been, I've been just this morning, in fact, speaking with a statistician who says, you really got to take a grain of salt with these phone surveys because they've
really, why? Because older people?
Yeah. Right. So over the last 10 years, in fact, from Pew, they've reported on the increasing unreliability of these phone surveys. Mm. So this is not to suggest there isn't a trend here, not to be too meta, but
hey,
wait
a minute. We're doing this on America Trends. There's got to be a trend.
No, right. I wonder to what extent. I'm myself curious, and I haven't seen this reported out anywhere yet. To what extent we should have some, quote unquote, epistemological humility with respect to what these numbers are showing us. You know what I mean? But again, setting that aside, to your point, about 3% of American adults would consider themselves to be religiously spiritual or abide by their own religious beliefs.
But I would say this, Chris, that if in fact the phone surveys skew more toward older Americans, then the trend is even greater. Because I think younger Americans, in many ways, who are living an urban lifestyle, there are many things that they believe in or things that they practice that they think really tie them to a higher being or a social conscience or whatever it may be, but it may not be a religion, or they may be intermingling or actually living with or married to someone of another faith, and neither has really set about the process of figuring out which religion, if any, they are going to ascribe to, particularly if they don't have children. So I would imagine that the trend is even greater.
Yeah, that's a fair point. As far as age or generation, it does suggest, if I look here, essentially that only 49% of millennials, according to Pew, are Christian, which compare that with, I think, 84% of baby boomers or those of the silent generation, which I generally mean to take those who were born before World War II but after World War, but after the 1920s, I think. I'm a little fuzzy on that, but essentially those two generations, the oldest Americans report, I think it's around 84% are Christian, according to Pew. So certainly Christianity drops off amongst millennials, although there has been, over the last 10 years, we're seeing a decline at basically across all demographics, age, race, gender, partisan affiliation, that kind of a thing. And one thing that's curiously absent in the Pew studies, it doesn't break out for urban, rural, or suburban. Mm-hmm. And those categories I know are sort of contested, but I'd be curious, for example, to see, as you're speaking to this idea of maybe more of the cosmopolitan urban areas,
right,
where there is more, right, heterogeneity.
But, you know, the data, though, also shows, and you have it in your reporting, that just like the rates of religious affiliation are going down, they see it in the pews. I mean, there's evidence everywhere. They just are not coming in the ways that they had in the past.
Totally.
So, you know, part of this, I mean, let's be honest about it. And I'm going to go back to the 1990s because this is a real trend. And I don't think you or I need to worry about Pew's research, which is often, you know, the best that there is. But this goes back. And I want to get into some of the rationale for this that I saw reported back in, well, just this year, but going back to the 1990s. But let's be honest, with the Catholic Church, we understand some of the problems that they've been facing that are real challenges for their future.
Totally, totally. So Catholic Church, according to Pew, from 2009 to 2019, there's been, well, the most dramatic drop has been in the Northeast, where in 2009, around 36% of adults, right, not just 36% of Christians, but 36% of adults in the Northeast considered themselves or would identify as Catholic. And that is now down to about 25%, somewhere in there, the mid-20s. And then across the country, the number of the percentage of Catholics has dropped from 23% of American adults to 20% of American adults. And curiously enough, in the Hispanic community, that used to essentially over 50% used to of the Latino or Hispanic community would consider themselves to be Catholic. That's now under 50% for the first time in these surveys. And so reasons for that, of course, range. I spoke yesterday with, are you familiar with the Los Angeles Auxiliary Bishop Barron, who runs a kind of podcast called Word on Fire? He's kind of the head of evangelization for the U.S. Catholic or the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. And he has a big, you know, social media following. I spoke with him yesterday on the phone for a piece I'm doing later this month on this very topic. And he, in his report to the bishops last month in Baltimore, said they're working to focus on social justice and beauty as two themes to sort of bring people back into the pews, because the message on sexuality does not resonate with, you know, populace. And I also can't help but, you know, note, you know, yesterday I covered a piece in today's paper on the McCarrick fallout. There have been new lawsuits filed now.
And by the way, explain that, because people may not know his name.
Sure. So Theodore McCarrick was a very powerful Catholic, not just archbishop, but cardinal in the U.S. He was the kind of ambassador, so to speak, he was the Archbishop of Washington, D.C., as well as he previously was the Archbishop in Newark. And he was also the public face for the push by the church to fight the sex scandal, the clerical sex abuse scandal. And he was very much promising reform and all this. Well, it turns out, around late summer 2018, allegations come out that he himself had been having all these allegations of sexual misconduct with seminarians and with young people. He was, months later, he was actually, just this year, he was laicized or defrocked as a member of the clergy. He is now, the last I heard, he's living in a friary in Kansas. And yesterday was the first, these aren't criminal charges, but this was the first civil lawsuit filed by a man who was a teenager in Hackensack, New Jersey in the 90s when he alleges that Theodore McCarrick sexually abused him. And so in D.C. there's now a new archbishop, but the giving was down in many parishes across D.C. And I think most large metropolitan areas, have tales like this. You know, if it's not McCarrick, it's another.
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, a lot of this is going to flare again because there are states that are extending the period in which somebody can report some of this abuse. So there's a lot going on in that area. And I would argue also that if the Catholic Church has not dealt fully with this issue, though they have taken, you know, a number of steps, that they have had to cut back on a lot of programming for young people because they've had to pay off these settlements. So maybe people aren't seeing the same benefit from being affiliated with the church as they might have in the past. Well, let's move from the Catholic over to the Protestants. And the share of American Protestants calling themselves born again or evangelical rose by 3%. But I would argue that with the politicization of the Protestant faith with these mega churches and the evangelicals and their association with right-wing causes, there are a lot of young people who might look at that and say, I'm not really a part of that. And, of course, these mainline Protestant movements, the United Congregations and such, they may be wondering and struggling to figure out what their identity is.
So I think, interestingly enough, when you go to look at geography, the percentage of Protestant adults or adults in the South, in the American South, who would identify as Protestant has gone from 64% to 53%, according to Pew. And so they're definitely seen, when you look at just Protestant. Now, as you mentioned, when you sort of break it out, there's some different kinds of movements. However, I do think that we are living a little bit in a strange time in which we have increasingly, like I interviewed Paula White Kane. Are you familiar with Paula White Kane?
Yes.
So I interviewed her a month ago, spent an hour with her, and she was named just recently. She's kind of de facto been President Trump's spiritual advisor.
And in fact, I read recently where the two of them were talking about developing some kind of mega church.
We'll be back with more of this America Trends podcast in 30 seconds. Bloom Shapiro, New England's largest independent business advisor, delivers over 40 years of experience in a broad base of services from accounting and tax to cybersecurity, technology, and transaction advisory. Bloom's experts will maintain an unwavering focus on your future so you can focus on what's most important to you, your business. Step forward at bloomshapiro.com.
Wow, that'd be fascinating. So I think that there's a strange element at which perhaps as a share of the American public, evangelical Christians, and she certainly would be, she's Pentecostal, word of faith, that wouldn't necessarily consider herself an evangelical, although she was on the evangelical board, but wouldn't align herself necessarily with mainline Protestantism. But, you know, as there's been this kind of dwindling of maybe percentage of Americans who consider themselves Christian or evangelical, there has been a political kind of growth in some respects. And we've had the sort of moral majority, quote unquote, for 40 years, but it does seem, at least explicitly, this administration has been more explicitly sort of, I'm not even certain that the term would be Christian. It's more just sort of explicitly talking about issues such as religious liberty or, you know, William Barr, Attorney General Barr, this fall gave a speech at Notre Dame, that was closed to the public, but in it he talked about sort of a militant atheism that's spreading across the country, and he says that the U.S. Constitution was essentially meant for a moral and religious country, which is interesting because according to a book called The Churching of America, in colonial America, about 17% of those folks considered themselves to be a member of a church.
Oh, really? We did have theocracies really back in those days. But I think one of the most brilliant ideas that James Madison had was a marketplace of ideas, you know, whether it's Christian or non-Christian, but let the religion sort it out. And that was something that, of course, had never been heard of up until that time. Well, let me go to Christian Smith. He's a sociology and religion professor, and you mentioned the University of Notre Dame. America's non-religious lurch, according to him, has mostly been the result of three historical events. I'd love to get your reaction to this.
Sure.
The association of the Republican Party with the Christian right, then the end of the Cold War. Now, the logic there was that we were fighting this godless, evil empire, and so we could show ourselves to be higher in many ways. We were economically stronger, but we also had these democratic values, but we also believed, we had faith. So that set us apart from the Soviet Union. And finally, it was 9/11. And I thought that was really interesting because thinking about it, there were religious fanatics attacking the United States. Therefore, did we really want to be on the same footing and be religiously engaged or affiliated if, in fact, that's what was offered by these fanatics? So three events that he considers to be central in the demise of the religious affiliation in America.
Right. And those are probably more close to the source of changes in America. I just got done reading a book called The First 3,000 Years of Christianity. Mm-hmm. By an Oxford historian, and he talks about, he's talking more about the global church in some ways, but he talks about actually the rise of the middle class, kind of post-war Europe and America, and particularly the rise of the nuclear family as actually you have more dispense, these families apparently in the 1940s, toward the end of the 1940s, there were these sort of country church Anglican church preachers who were writing and complaining to their hires up saying the parents now are no longer sending their children to Sunday school because what were they doing with their weekends? Well, they had weekends, right? They had more money. They had fewer kids. They didn't need to, they perhaps were not in an agrarian lifestyle. And so as the family has become more important, we've seen less of a reliance upon church schooling, church social programs, and he suggests at least that coupled with also dramatic changes in how we understand gender, that those two things have become real, that they are really pushing broadly across, you know, the last 150 years or so. That's what's really pushing this sort of growing incredulousness towards organized religion or these very doctrinal faiths.
Yeah, so we look at certain things that have happened within these institutions, the fallibility that we now see, and then many historical events and even changes in family structure. And it's really interesting, in this article by Derek Thompson, a staff writer at The Atlantic, he said that this is a movement that is not slow, that is not subtle, it's not cyclical. I mean, it is really an aggressive movement. And you look by 2010, this grab bag, he calls it, of atheists, agnostics, and spiritual dabblers had tripled in size. So clearly the trend is in that direction.
And yesterday, even speaking with Bishop Barron, I asked him that very question. I said, is this unprecedented? And he said, well, you know, during the French Revolution, those were certainly tough times when basically Catholicism was outlawed, late 18th century. But he said, what's different about today is just the rise of those religiously unaffiliated, religious nuns, whatever we're going to call them, agnostics, atheists, that rise is totally without precedent, at least to him within the context of the U.S. And so, and this is speaking anecdotally, but I know that there does seem to be increasingly, when you talk to friends who grew up within a church experience, for whatever reason, it's a dramatic drop in the number of people who are attending who physically belong to a church, maybe have their names registered with a church. And what we have seen, again, anecdotally, is the rise in these other kinds of communities. I was speaking to a woman up in Maine this summer who said that CrossFit has become like a religious experience for a number of people.
Really?
Where, yes, these kinds of fitness classes, these fitness groups, right? Well, you can imagine the ways in which, I mean, you know, even trivia, these like barroom trivias where I was a reporter out in Rapid City, South Dakota, every Wednesday night, there was a group of us who would get together and do trivia. And it almost has, I mean, it has a Facebook group, there's a friend group that spins off from that. but it's like a little church. And being part of a church obviously has a lot of social collateral. That's like, that can be helpful. If you know, if a family member is sick, you get a lot of pans of bars and casseroles or whatever. If you have to use, if you have like an anniversary or something.
Yeah, well, that's what I was referring to earlier about the sense of community that religion gets. But now we're finding other means to support us in different groups, as you suggest.
Right. And even, you know, I'm from Minnesota, so I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan. I flew back from Minneapolis last night, and the number of people who are watching the Vikings on their little, on the screens on the back of a, of the airline seats, you know, I mean, it was just stunning. And it feels like it's such a, we have other ways of identifying us, of bringing each other together, of finding common purpose. And I don't have enough, I haven't thought enough about whether there's good or bad with that. Relative to it all being,
well, you know, like, given football and some of the problems it has, I wouldn't turn to that as my national faith. But
let me go
back to the issue of Democrats and Republicans, because it seems as if some of this movement does have a political tinge. You say in your article that the religious trends also impact the political landscape. Religious nuns are growing faster among Democrats than Republicans, though their ranks are swelling in both partisan coalitions, and that comes directly from the Pew report.
So just some kind of flashpoints. A third of the Democratic Party now would be considered religiously unaffiliated. And that's a much smaller number with Republicans, although it has grown. That within the Democratic Party, it does differ on race. I think around 70-80%, somewhere in there, for Black and Hispanic members of the Democratic Party still consider themselves to be religious, versus it's around 47% for white Democrats. But certainly it does seem to be with the Republican Party, it seems like, I think like 80% of white Republicans consider themselves to be not just religious, but Christian, which suggests that's, I have yet to see, you know, in terms of class or geography, I have yet to see a bigger, determining factor for what makes somebody a Republican or a Democrat, at least amongst whites, like religion. And so I think that particularly the Republican Party, and this, we have had some major legal changes, court cases, that has made, again, the last 2 years like a supercharged 2 years when it comes to the sort of federal push for example, religious liberty. And we can talk about what that really means, but it sort of stems from the Trinity Lutheran Supreme Court case in Missouri, in which the Supreme Court said in a 6-3 decision that the federal government or the state government of Missouri cannot basically hold a school's Christian affiliation, a preschool's Christian affiliation against it when deciding whether or not it's eligible in a grant program for like recycled tires that would be resurfacing a playground. And that's had dramatic consequences, yeah.
So is this following the abortion activity that's going on state by state? Are you seeing, because let's be honest about it, long Southern strategy was building over time. It started with a lot of white males in the South, and then it grew, and it had an evangelical tinge to it. It had an anti-feminist tinge. Now we're seeing that a lot of the issues that might have been considered secular in the past have been made into religious concerns by this very far-right group of evangelicals.
I tend to think, being someone who reports on this, that, well, I'll say the safe thing, which is they can't possibly be unaware of the political ramifications of this kind of push, right? And by this kind of push, what I mean is the Department of Justice has filed a number of what they call statements of interest in cases ranging from, there's a Native American tribe in New Jersey who has private land, and they are seeking to do ceremonies on that land. But the local homeowners association, which sometimes can be their own sort of fiefdoms, they have said they don't want that. Well, the Department of Justice has come in and filed a statement in that case. Just last week, the Department of Justice filed a statement of interest on behalf of a Maryland Christian school who, as part of its mission, says they don't believe in gay marriage. They hold to traditional marriage beliefs, and the state of Maryland booted them from a voucher program, saying, well, we're not going to pay for Maryland students to go to your school then, or as part of the voucher program, because you don't abide with our non-discrimination policy. But now the Department of Justice is saying that they shouldn't be booted on behalf of that. It's a free exercise of their religion, yada, yada, yada. So I do think that there is this movement, and we see it in fundraising, right? How often do we hear a surrogate for the president say, we now have a fourth of the judiciary, the federal judiciary, has been appointed by President Trump, and they're all, they believe in religious liberty, or they're pro-life, or, these are judges who believe in the kind of Judeo-Christian mindset as we do. Sometimes they're less explicit than others, but I do think totally that this has been, we have seen religion sort of weaponized.
And this goes along with millennials who do define themselves so much more clearly as either Democrats or disinterested in the Republican Party, and they describe themselves as belonging to a non-Christian faith in much greater numbers than older Americans. Let me ask you just a couple more questions, because I'm taking a lot of your time today, but this is so interesting. What about the impact that Hispanics may have going forward, because they have traditionally been very devout and very religious, and we have a growing population, but that growing population is younger as well, and many are new to America. So just tell us what impact you see the Hispanic community having on the numbers that we've been discussing.
I do think that the Hispanic population, from what I've seen in terms of these numbers, parallels a lot of other ethnic groups that have entered the country. And when you think, for example, about the Irish, right? I think that first couple waves, I can speak for myself, my own ancestors, very, very Catholic, right? And now when we go to the family reunion, it's very pluralistic. And I think that what we're seeing in terms of Hispanics is, according to Pew, is that now that number, the percentage of Hispanics who are religious who are Catholic, or who are, as you say, devout, going to mass or services more than a few times a month, or is actually also dropping. And so I wonder to what extent, as they get in, as that population moves more broadly into the American middle class, that actually their religiosity also might be diluted a little bit. But again, that's totally me just sort of throwing darts a little bit, right?
No, but that's a good dart. I think you've got a target there. What about Joel Osteen and Kanye West? In other words, you mentioned that you saw everybody on the phone on an airplane or watching a screen or what have you.
Sure.
And,
sure.
There is probably the opportunity for somebody to come along, just as many of these televangelists did back in the 90s and 2000s, and really have an impact on a younger generation if there were a message that people could gather around. Do you see any of that happening using social media?
I was just thinking, in preparing for this interview, I was thinking actually a lot about Joel Osteen and Kanye West. Because it does seem to be Kanye who has made himself sort of this kind of, court jester figure in American culture. In a lot of ways, all of a sudden, this sort of turn, very explicitly singing about Chick-fil-A in the most recent album he's dropped, because they're closed on Sundays, right? I wonder to what extent, we have seen a long history of particularly evangelical church using the tools of media, of sort of mass media, to disseminate. In the book I mentioned earlier, The First 3,000 Years of Christianity, McCullough talks about musicals or sort of Broadway light productions that were put on around essentially the beginning of the 20th century, 1920s, 1930s, by evangelical sort of leaders to try to show the faith in new ways. And so I suspect we will only see that grow in terms of, I interviewed a number of pastors who have, particularly mega churches, who have Twitter accounts, or they do their services broadcast over Facebook. At the bishop's meeting last month in Baltimore, they even were speaking about ways to engage people on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, etc. And so whether or not there is a kind of particularly charismatic figure who can cut through all of that, that media fragmentation. I'm not certain. We have seen different, I think Olstein certainly won. I don't know to what extent there can be, we're so fragmented in terms of
well,
media.
Well, when you look at it though, I mean, we see almost a political cult that has built around Donald Trump's Twitter account. And it's possible. I would imagine a religious cult could form. Speaking of that, let me ask you in closing about some of these, like the Unitarians who've come along. And then, of course, there are other smaller religions. And how are they holding? Are they holding steady in the Pew Report? Jewish faith, Hindu, Muslim?
Sure. So according to the Pew Report, the number of American adults who identify as Jewish or Muslim or Hindu has all remained steady around between 1-2%. And so that's remained steady. Same with Mormons have remained steady at 2%. I think that, as I mentioned earlier, the spiritual or abide by own religious beliefs has also remained steady. And so I think that, and I'm not certain, I would love to see a study as to what about those populations has made them resilient or at least uninfluenced by these larger trends in American culture that has impacted Christianity. And frankly, I bet some of those churches are probably also interested in finding out how have you maintained your rank, though small, but they've remained consistent.
Like some of the candidates running for president, around that 2% level. Well, listen, Chris, I just took it in a totally different direction. Chris Vondrachek, fascinating. You were so great, and I really appreciate you sharing all that you know and all the work that you're doing on religion in America for the Washington Times. Thank you being here today on America Trends.
Thanks so much for having me, Larry. I really appreciate it. It was fun.
America Trends podcast is part of the MHNR Network. MHNRnetwork.com. Bloom Shapiro, New England's largest independent business advisor, delivers 40 years of experience in industries from manufacturing to professional services to nonprofit.